For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. And happy Independence Day Eve, or Interdependence Day Eve, or Interdependence Day Eve. So, 4th of July weekend, I talk about liberation. And the American ideal of liberation and freedom and justice and how it relates to our practice of Zazen and the Buddhist idea of liberation. And I started to talk about this yesterday, and I'm going to say some of the same things, and fortunately almost nobody is here from yesterday, but I'm going to say a bunch of different things too. So, So, you know, our Zazen is about, in some ways, personal freedom, freedom from our own individual ancient twisted karma, seeing our own personal wholeness, facing all of that, seeing our personal estrangement and seeing our personal interdependence with all things. The ideal and idea of freedom and liberation and liberty and justice for all and in our country has a lot of resonance with that, I think. And it also has lots of problems. And yet the fact that we have these ideals gives us a way of working with the bodhisattva practices and the bodhisattva vows that I really appreciate. So our practice, this Zazen, is the samadhi of all beings. We settle into being present with all beings. We realize our communion with all beings. And our precepts, our bodhisattva precepts, are about benefiting all beings, being helpful rather than harmful, supporting helpfulness rather than harmfulness, and radical respect for all beings. So what I really want to get to tonight is talking about what that means, this radical respectfulness for all beings, in the context of, this is our first 4th of July in the age of Trump. So I'm going to come back to that. But also, the problems that we have now are not just about Mr. Trump. And so how do we speak with radical respectfulness for the problems of our country at the same time that we appreciate the ideals, the Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate on the 4th of July, says we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men, it says men, are created equal, endowed by their creator. And of course for us it's just the creation that's arising right now, all of us together, with certain inalienable rights. Among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And more I think this idea of the pursuit of happiness is a koan for us, along with all the other koans this brings us. And as I said yesterday, Thomas Jefferson used to be a hero of mine. Now I think of him as a total koan, a slaveholder, fathered slaves, and who contributed to the theft of Native American land and destruction of Native American cultures. And still, he was a brilliant man some of his writings were brilliant advocacies for democracy, for liberty, for and continuing inspirations that led to many inspirations for liberty and justice. He vowed eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the human mind. What a great aspiration. How do we see all of the ways in which our mind is caught? How do we see the aspiration to free our minds from all forms of tyranny, inner and outer? And, you know, this is something very radical and noble. He said the price of liberation is ongoing vigilance. Or he actually said the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. But I think of this as a Zazen motto, the price of liberation is ongoing vigilance. It's not enough to realize Buddha, to have some experience of illumination. We need to keep paying attention. Jefferson also said, I hope we crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, which dare already to challenge our government to a trial by strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country, unquote. He said this back then. So we have these ideals of liberty and justice for all. We still celebrate them. So this is wonderful. It shows some possibility for change. It shows some, just to have those ideals means that we can look at the situation of our society and think about the Bodhisattva vow in terms of how benefiting all, what does it mean to benefit all beings, in a way that most of the history of Asian Buddhism didn't even have that possibility. You know, most Zen teachers, Dogen said, to don't be involved with political leaders, because it was all warlords and feudal lords, and there wasn't any idea of democracy, or there wasn't the idea of participation, there wasn't the idea of changing. I mean, it happened sometimes, and there were Asian Buddhists who were dedicated to reform, but in different ways. Anyway, we need to face the problems and the sadness of all the difficulties and suffering going on now. How do we do that with radical respect? This is a great koan. Thomas Jefferson is a great koan. Donald Trump is a great koan. We still do have the means to produce change and support well-being. Lincoln said, government of the people, by the people, for the people shall not perish from the earth. And now we have government of the billionaires, by the billionaires, and for the billionaires. It's just very clear. So, again, my responsibility as a precept holder, responsible to the precepts of liberation, is to talk about how our country is doing from the point of view of Bodhisattva values, and to speak difficult truths as I see them. And so I tried to do this yesterday and got into some trouble, and I'm going to try again today. I think many people in our country and around the world understand that this country's political and economic business, as usual, is a fraud. Many people reject what is happening. That's the reason many people voted for Donald Trump. And we don't know how to respond. So what I want is to try and talk about practical response. I don't feel like wallowing in hopelessness is relevant or I don't think that's realistic. I think change is possible. How do we do that? What does this mean? But I also, you know, we speak of our ancient twisted karma individually, and I've talked about this collectively, and I'm just going to say a little bit about what I talked about yesterday about the history of our country and how this situation is not just about Donald Trump. We haven't had a real democracy in some time. Citizens United turned over our elections to the highest bidder. The Russians hacked our last elections, but the Republicans have been doing it for a long time, at least since Bush v. Gore. They've been gerrymandering, throwing minorities off the voting rolls in many states. I mentioned yesterday, please check out research of Harvey Wasserman, W-A-S-S-E-R-M-A-N, who documented with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. how John Kerry won Ohio in 2004. The Republicans have been doing this, and the Democrats, I have to say, have not been doing much to stop it. So, in some ways, the history of our country, I talked about this yesterday, and I'm not going to repeat all of this. There's the going back to the founding fathers, and they were patriarchal fathers. Women were not allowed to vote until less than 100 years ago. There's an article on Consortium News I quoted yesterday called A Deep History of America's Deep State. I'm not going to go over that today. But just that we can see the Revolutionary War and the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence in various ways. In some ways, it was a call for freedom, but the people calling for freedom were the 1% of their day. George Washington was the wealthiest person in the colonies. And they were dedicated to, the word democracy does not appear in the U.S. Constitution. They were interested in a government that was controlled by the well-to-do. Only property people could vote. And also the issue of race, which is so much part of our world now, goes back to that. Our country was founded on slavery and racism. Our economy was built on slavery and racism, North and South. So I will quote from a book by a current historian named Gerald Horn called The Counter-Revolution of 1776, Slave Resistance and the Origins of the United States of America. He says what helped to prompt July 4th, 1776 was the perception amongst European settlers on the North American mainland that London was moving rapidly towards abolition of slavery. This perception was prompted by a case decided in London in June 1772, which seemed to suggest that abolition, which not only was going to be ratified in London itself, was going to cross the Atlantic and basically sweep through the mainland, thereby jeopardizing numerous fortunes, not only based upon slavery, but the slave trade. And this would destroy the economy of the North as well as the South. And in fact, there was total abolition in the British Empire in 1807. Modern historians are showing that side of the Revolutionary War. History is complicated. The words of Thomas Jefferson, at least, are brilliant and noble. There certainly was a side to the American Revolution that was talking about freedom and justice and so forth. So I don't mean to paint any of this in black and white, excuse the pun, but anyway, racism is part of what we live with now. So everybody here this evening is white, but we know about the violence in Chicago, where we live. We know that African-American people in our country, in our city, are killed by police who are not held accountable. This happens regularly, almost every week. We know that there's mass incarceration and that happens mostly of African-Americans and other minorities, and that that's a continuation of slavery and Jim Crow in another form. Slavery because a lot of the prisons are privatized and the inmates work for private corporations at no pay or little pay. And our current Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has proposed to enhance privatized for-profit prisons and increase the horrible so-called war on drugs. So we have gun violence, we have gang violence as a symptom of the lack of equal opportunities for education, for employment, for housing, and for voting, as equal voting rights doesn't happen. So there's a lot of things in the current situation that are very extreme under Mr. Trump, but it's a continuation of things that have been happening. But it's extreme. The Republican health care bill is a huge tax giveaway to billionaires. It eliminates health care for 22 million people, cuts benefits for a great many more. I'm going to just mention some of the things that are going on. But then I want to talk about how do we I want to try and talk about how we respond to it. I want to say some things about climate. I've talked before about the monthly reports on truthout.org by Dar Jamal, J-M-A-I-L. And there was another one today, reports of the current climate science, and just a few bits of it. 2016 was the hottest year on record again. The sea level rise is accelerating. Parts of Antarctica are now green. It's raining in Antarctica, and this is winter in Antarctica. In 2016, an area larger than Texas melted in Antarctica. The planet is warming 20 times faster than the fastest natural climate change on record, which was when it came out of the last ice age. So these are just a few little bits of the most recent science about climate change. Oh, and I mentioned yesterday that the EPA, last Thursday, the news included that the EPA, current EPA chief, met with Dow Chemical CEO privately about a decision to allow the use of a pesticide that has sickened farm workers and is known to cause brain damage in children. So Scott Pruitt met for about half hour with the Dow CEO March 9th, and 20 days later, he unexpectedly reversed course and approved use of the pesticide manufactured by Dow. And many other things the EPA is doing about rolling back drinking water safeguards. Today, Mr. Trump announced a massive approval of offshore drilling on all the coasts and all our oceans, including the Arctic, supposedly ending the ban that Mr. Obama tried to enact in some parts of it anyway. The last thing is, which is not mentioned much, but the endless warfare. The war in Afghanistan is now the longest war in United States history, and I don't know why we're fighting it. I mean, there's the Trump foreign policy has been characterized as him traveling around the world trying to sell weapon systems. His first trip was to Saudi Arabia, and he promised $110 billion worth of weapons. So the various wars in the Mideast started by our invasion of Iraq when we had to attack somebody after 9/11, even though Iraq had nothing to do with it. Anyway, I think all of you know about this stuff. Sorry to repeat all this stuff. We should be having massive cutbacks on wasteful military spending, like the funding of submarines to fight ISIS in the desert. And ISIS, by the way, calls the Trump Muslim ban the blessed ban because it's a wonderful recruiting tool for them. So, you know, in April 1967, Dr. Martin Luther King called the U.S. government the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. And I think it's probably still the case. Okay, so what do we do about this? How do we respond to this? What do our bodhisattva precepts say about how we respond to this? How do we think about this? I don't think feeling overwhelmed and hopeless is realistic. Things change, we know. There's lots of examples of things changing in our lifetimes. People responding and resisting make a difference. So I want to try and talk about this in terms of precepts and spirituality and bodhisattva vow. Yesterday I read Naomi Klein's, from Naomi Klein's new book, No is Not Enough, meaning saying no to Donald Trump is not enough. We have to have a positive response, and she has a 5-step program. And so you can check that out on Google if you find it on Google. But we have to offer something positive. I think she does. But how do we talk about this? How do we be radically respectful to all beings? So one thing I want to say is that spirituality does not mean being nice. Buddhism doesn't mean being nice. So I think a lot of us, you know, would like to dialogue with our relatives who are Republicans and try and find a way to talk to people who support Trump. And I don't wish Trump ill. This isn't about enemies. This isn't about blame. This is ancient twisted karma. It goes back to Jefferson. It goes back before that. It's not about blame. We are all stuck in this. We're all part of this. And yet, we have to speak truth to power. If all we care about is dialoguing with Republicans and being nice to them, we're ignoring all the people who are being damaged. So African-American people, young African-American men who it's possible to find a way for some young African-American men to get free from the cycle, but many feel caught in situation of no opportunity. Muslims are now targeted. Mexicans and other people from Latin America. Immigrants are now targeted. LGBTQ people are targeted. People who need health care are now facing, no health care. Elderly people are now facing the end of Medicaid or severe cutbacks in Medicaid. And women, all women, are facing a threat to women's health care, not to mention women's rights. Radical respect for all beings does not mean just talking with Republicans and ignoring suffering. So I need to say that. This is difficult. This is really difficult. How do we speak truth to power? How do we respond, each in our own way? Some of us go to demonstrations or call congresspeople, and if you're so inclined, I would encourage you. But just to be kind, to talk to Republicans, but also talk to Muslims. Also talk to, we have Muslims in our Sangha, by the way. Be aware of immigrants. There are people here in our Sangha who are trying to take care of immigrants who are feeling threatened, who are threatened. I was thinking about Thich Nhat Hanh's precepts of interbeing. Amongst them are, one of the things he says, do not say untruthful things for the sake of personal interest or to impress people. Do not utter words that cause division and hatred. It's pretty difficult when we live in a world of division and hatred. We can talk about the situation without talking about it in terms of hatred. I do not hate Republicans or Donald Trump. I don't even hate Democrats. How do we talk about the situation in terms of the situation without blame, but trying to speak truth? Do not spread news that you do not know to be certain. Do not criticize or condemn things of which you are not sure. So I'm trying to talk about the truth that I see. I'm trying to share information. Always speak truthfully and constructively. Well, I don't know how to speak constructively. It's my job to try and speak about what I see in terms of precepts, in terms of the situation of Independence Day. Thich Nhat Hanh says, have the courage to speak out about situations of injustice, even when doing so may threaten your own safety. Thich Nhat Hanh was in the middle of the Vietnam War. He spoke out against both the South Vietnamese and the North Vietnamese government, and he was had to leave because he was in danger of being killed by both sides. So he had to go into exile in France. How do we speak truth about the injustices that are happening now? Without blame. What does it mean to radically respect all beings in a situation of great polarization? This is a great challenge to us. I also want to read number 12 of Thich Nhat Hanh's 14 precepts of interbeing. Do not kill. Do not let others kill. Find whatever means possible to protect life and prevent war. So we're living in a kind of civil war. And it's violent. Eliminating health care for 22 million people is a kind of violence. It's going to kill people. How do we talk about that? How do we try and stop that? So I think one of the things we have to offer, in addition to just being willing to speak truth to power, being willing to do that in a way that's not about enemies or blame, but just looking at the situation, knowing that this isn't about, our Secretary of State from ExxonMobil may be responsible for climate damage in a lot of ways. So I could talk about his company and how it helped create climate damage and so forth. But we have to get over personal blame. We have to talk about the situation. It goes way back. How do we present instead a positive vision? And I think part of what we are doing here, doing this practice of Zazen, this ancient practice that's been handed down to us, is providing a positive vision of the kind of way in which human beings can be, the kind of human potential that's possible. We don't need warfare. Billionaires seem to feel like they need more and more and more money. It's sad. These poor people who have billions of dollars and feel like they don't have enough. it's sad. How do we model kindness, and cooperation, non-blaming, but also speaking truth about what's going on. So our response on Independence Day, our Bodhisattva social vow, you know, we can borrow the U.S., American ideals of equal justice under the law. We don't have equal justice under the law, clearly, right now. There's one system of justice for minorities and African Americans, another system of justice for, white folks, one system of justice maybe for men and for another for women. And then there's a different system of justice for billionaires. Anyway, how do we see liberty and justice for all? And then again, what does it mean to the pursuit of happiness? I think our Zazen teaches us something about the pursuit of happiness, or at least contentment. How do we find wholeness? How do we find a way to respond to each other with kindness? And how does that present some positive vision that is part of what we can offer in response to what our country is doing now, what our government is doing now? The people of our country understand it's not about the people, it's about the power systems. But of course, that means that lots of people are caught up in the ideas of the media system and so forth. Anyway, okay, I'll stop. Comments, responses, questions, reflections. Caitlin, any thoughts? Yeah, yes, that's right. That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. I didn't hear it. What did he say?
But two things that he did say was, yes, we did, and yes, we can. And guess what? He's right. Yes, we did, and yes, we can. It's not hopeless.
Right.
So combining that with, I said it was something usually. So combining that with what Chinatown has to say, and what we have to say, which is part of why I still come here.
Good to see you. Thank you. Yeah, there is change. There's so many examples of change. It's only 100 years ago that women weren't allowed to vote, and women, marched in the streets and went on hunger strikes and they got the vote. And it was only very recently that LGBTQ people weren't allowed to be themselves in public, and now we have gay marriage. And they fought for that. So it's, change happens. Other comments? Michael.
About the radical idea of liberalism is. You know, that I think it's this interesting thing to write, to make a piece of writing and have a conversation between the head and the heart. This fact is not liberalism, not this. It's like something beyond that. Also, you know, one of the things I've been finding so interesting right now about this practice is trying to open myself up to a greater understanding or just the possibility of the constraints of time.
The which?
Like the constraints of time.
Yeah. Right.
There seems to be a little bit of an open door or something every time I just read something or someone mentions something that kind of like opens that idea of time. And I was thinking about how, you know, the accelerated rate at which things have gotten to where they are, you know, in such a short period of time. And so I was in this not the manner, it's more expansive, sort of like just playing around with the idea of you know, like being a part of the past and the future, and really thinking about, you know, about offers me a little bit of support in figuring out how to write so that my response can still be immediate and not get caught up in the fever of my writing or lack of it helps.
Good. Yeah, it's one of the gifts of practice. Yeah. The bodhisattva time, that we have this sense, and I think we get it, we start to feel it from Zazen, that, you know, so we can talk about, you know, Thomas Jefferson and Buddha and Dogen and this sense of, and the future too, and this sense of time, and at the same time we have the constraints of, you know, all of our lists of things we have to do, and, you know, and that we can feel stifled by, but also having this sense of a wider sense of time, bodhisattva time, allows us more air in which to respond, that we don't, that there's possibility, and that the Republican Party, as it currently stands, is not the end of the world. that change happens. Matt, I felt you thinking something.
Yeah, I've been recently rereading the Lotus Sutra, and the whole thing about time comes up, where every paragraph or something about millions of billions of trillions of eons have gone by, and if you put them all together, it's still. And so that sense of time, I think, that larger sense of time that's incomprehensible, really, is a wonderful gift, I think, to have that sense. And also that sense of the bodhisattvas under the ground. I've been really feeling that lately. Like, just feeling like, even though there's so much suffering and everything so crazy, there is so much. They're there, you know, and they... Like, I know a lot of people where I that my wife works with now for some political action kind of groups and things like that. They're so busy now. They're so active at that. And, you know, before November, they weren't doing anything. And now it's like there's so much, at least, you know, where I live, you know, that going on. And it's really hopeful, even though everything seems so dire. So I think that's...
Yeah, Gary Snyder used to say, he said this a good while ago, but it keeps applying more and more, that we have to act as if our heads are on fire and as if we have all the time in the world, both. It's So, David, last word.
Two things, if I may. One thing I want to share that I heard NPR this morning, I want to share with them, and really struck me. Giddens is her last name. She's a singer, and she was being interviewed by Terry Gross. And she talked about slaves and the term slaves, and she says not to use the term slaves, but to use them. Enslaved people. When people are born, they're born as persons.
Oh.
And then they are enslaved.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting. I've never heard that before. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
Not about people going back historically. They weren't slaves, they were enslaved people. But
yeah.
People.
Yes. We're all born free.
I share that with everyone. But the thing is, for me personally, the last couple of weeks have been a change. Part of it was sparked by you when I said I wanted to punch out Donald Trump, and you said that's my own twisted karma. You said it to me, and I really find myself, and it is hard, changing in the last couple of weeks. And I think what's so important is to be for something, but also part of our bodhisattva vows is like to be respectful. Not that we have to be kind to Democrats or kind to Republicans, but to be respectful and to listen and to talk to each other and not right away make somebody wrong. And what we're doing, and I think that's part of our call to this practice. You know, that the person who's across from me is an extension of me.
Right.
Okay,
but I want to interrupt because, and I'm sorry I interrupt. That's a bad habit of mine, but there are bad actions. So it's not that, okay, the person across from you is part of you, and so therefore everything is fine. Everything is fine, and there are things that are happening that are really harmful. Okay, I hear you saying that, and it's as if it's like, you know, brushing that aside. No, Jerry.
I'm trying to take it saying it's like Kitten said so well, to be for something. And if we're making other people wrong, we're not being for something.
But their actions may be wrong.
The actions, right. It's
okay.
Not about the person, it's the action.
Okay, that's better.
And that's the thing that we're focused on.
Okay, Jerry?
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. It's something I learned recently. We had an incident at my condo when somebody was complaining about a barbecue. And the people they were complaining about the people they were complaining about our intervention.
Okay.
And my friend, TJ, came to me and he said, you know, this is racist. Why shouldn't I be able to barbecue? And I think there were other things going on. But he wasn't wrong. I think there was a little bit of racism here. And so I'm on the board, and so I think I'm the president and say, okay, you know, everybody else gets the barbecue. We can't tell them we can't barbecue. And it had to do with the smoke coming into his house. And I said, there's smoke everywhere. I said, I hate the smell of burning meat, but I smell it. You just have to get over that. But what I realized was my friend with you. So he's going to barbecue. And he said, we demand an apology. And the president apologized to him in a very nice apology. But what I realized is he was still upset. And he said, you know, Jerry, it shouldn't be you and Susie apologizing to me. It should be there are racist people in our building. And what I realized is he was trying to call that out. Not necessarily. It wasn't about the apology. It was about the acknowledgement that people here are doing the wrong thing. And it was a gift. Once I got there, it was like, oh, thank you. Because for a moment I thought, you know, he's more upset than he needs to be here. But then I realized wasn't about the barbecue. It was about the fact that there were racist people living in our building, and we need to be able to call that out and to say, hey, this is not acceptable in this community.
Well,
and
America is racist. America is created with racism. We are all affected by that. We have to acknowledge it. That you can't just say, oh, we're post-racial now. It's like part of our DNA as a country, and we're all impacted by it. So how do we acknowledge the ancient twisted karma of this? It's a huge koan.
Yeah, I guess when you said that you know there are bad actions, you have to call it out.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And that's what's hard.
It's a huge koan. Yeah. Thank you.